with me through it all. So she deserved all the respect in the world from me. We spent the night in the Wynn Hotel and Casino and popped champagne. Back in New York, it was time for the jury selection. The DA was a young Italian man and his assistant was an Asian man, both in their early 30s. The jurors, who they brought in to select from, were 95% white, only four blacks, and all four told the judge that they couldn't make a proper decision because they claimed to have family who were hurt by gun violence. Most of the time, when jurors say that to a judge, they're just trying to get out of doing jury duty. Blacks and Latinos need our people on the juries to help decide the fate of our trials and for the trials to actually be fair. The four black jurors were relieved of their duties, and there were only whites left to select from. Irv and I had to base our selections on which ones we thought would not make a biased decision. I looked in their eyes, listened to them speak, and hoped we chose wisely. The prosecution called the two detectives who arrested me. After swearing in with hands on the Bible, the second detective began. His testimony was on point until he said, "And when we approached Mr. Johnson's vehicle, I saw a nickel-plated gun in his hand. He was trying to put it away in the box so we wouldn't see it. I shot him a look like he was out of his fucking mind. I knew I was going to lose the trial after that testimony." Irv questioned both the detectives about the other unmarked car that pulled up seconds after them. "How did they know to come to the location of my truck?" "It was just a coincidence," the arresting D's responded. "They just so happened to be driving past and stopped to help us. We didn't call them. There was no way for us to prove that they were profiling, and I was in a bad position. If I continued with the trial and left it up to the jury, whose side would they believe? Alchemist or two New York City detectives who claimed they saw a gun in my hand?" The DA went into the hallway and rolled the TV and DVD player into the courtroom, perhaps to play my Mac 10 handle and infamous Allegiance DVD for the jury to make me look like a menace to society. There were a lot of guns and violence in those videos. Maybe it was a scare tactic, but it worked. Along with the lies from the detectives, I knew I couldn't win this one. We took a lunch break, and the DA stepped to Irv and offered him a new deal. 3.5 years in prison, as opposed to the original 5 years, but only if I accepted the offer within 24 hours. Staring out at the Hudson River and Giant Stadium that night in my backyard, I contemplated my next move. "Do you want to see your kids when they're in their 20s or in 3 years?" I asked myself. "Do you want to come back in 3 short years and still have a career, or be gone for so long that your music doesn't matter to the world anymore?" I called my moms, brother, Havoc, 50, and a gang of others to see how they felt about my choices. They all wanted me to fight. I felt like an asshole for not listening to 50 when he told me to put surveillance cameras in my truck. That footage would have proved everything. I had beaten many cases and avoided prison by the skin of my teeth for many years. "You can't win them all," I told myself. "Take the 3.5 years, come out smarter, stronger, and better than ever." Then came the hard part. I had to go inside the house and explain to my kids what was about to happen. Most parents might hide that from their 11-year-old son and 9-year-old daughter, but I gave my kids the real, all the time. I told my son first. "But you're not a bad person," Shaka said, dropping a few tears. "You just carry a gun for protection. You don't run around hurting people." Yeah, but that gun was illegal, I said. I broke the law by having an illegal gun in my truck. I should have gotten a gun license or a bodyguard, but I didn't. So now I have to pay for my mistakes. Shaka understood clearly, but he couldn't hold back the tears. I was proud of him for being strong, though. 3 years goes by fast, kid. Remember when we were on tour together with 50 and Eminem? Well, in 2 months, that'd be 3 years ago. See how fast that went? It seemed like yesterday, don't it? He agreed. We both went into my bedroom, and I explained the same to my daughter, Taser. Taser took it well also. I don't even think she cried. Maybe while I wasn't looking. After breaking the news to my little ones, I confirmed my decision with my lawyer, Irv, and got right down to business. If I was going to prison for 3.5 years, I needed to leave enough product in the streets to keep my name alive until I got back. I hadn't even signed a deal with Voxonic yet. I walked into the court the next morning, early, with my wife Kiki and my lawyer Irv. Our plan was to accept a 3.5 year deal by pleading guilty and to ask the judge for another 3 month extension on sentencing so I could work on my health, finish my album, and do a promo tour before doing my time. The judge granted the 3 months. Time was limited, so I started knocking songs and videos out fast. Planning the promo tour and filming myself every day, uploading themostinfamous.com with footage until I started my sentence. I was racing the clock like a madman. Jerry Lamont, the writer and director of Blackout, called me and invited me to the movie premiere on West 23rd Street in Manhattan. I brought Kiki, Draws, Sam Scarfo, and Scientific. The theater was packed with press, celebrities, and movie industry people. After the premiere, Quincy Jones' son, QD3, called and asked me to star in a new documentary about rappers and guns that he was filming. The Alchemist got a call about using a song from HNIC Part 2 for the popular video game Grand Theft Auto. We decided to give them Dirty New Yorker. Peter Keys, my HNIC2 distributor and manufacturer, told me that the MP3 player company Sansa wanted me to promote their new MP3 device in exchange for $200,000 in marketing and promotion of HNIC Part 2. My head was spinning. My plate was full of things to accomplish in such a limited amount of time. After a quick East Coast promo tour, my last performance before turning myself in was at B.B. King Blues Club in Times Square. Kiki and I arrived early to knock out a bunch of press interviews before the show. Backstage, my guests started arriving. Twin, Godfather, Ty Nitty, Gotti, Chinky, Tyson, Umpacino, Maserati Fox, even Bars and Hooks popped up. I hadn't seen them in years. Cormega, Noid, and a bunch of 50s boys from G-Unit. The club was packed. The only people missing were Havoc and my man Fly, who eventually showed up 20 minutes before showtime. After performing a bunch of HNIC Part 2 songs, Havoc, drunk and tired of waiting, got on the mic and demanded that we do our Mobb Deep songs. I wasn't planning to do Mobb Deep songs until after my solo set, but once again, I didn't want to look like Havoc and I weren't on the same page, because that's a sign of weakness. So I decided to go with the flow. The show sequence was a little sloppy, but we still killed it. The entire performance was professionally filmed, so I could release it on DVD. It was an emotional night for me. Even though I didn't show it on my face, Kiki and I got home, and I felt like the world was off of my back. I was ready to get the time ahead of me over with, so I can come back to my family and the world as a brand new man. 50 came to my crib that weekend for the first time. We weren't expecting him. The kids were excited to see him. We showed him around our place, and he told me not to stress, and asked me if I could help him write a screenplay for one of his G-Unit books titled Ski Mask Way. Murder Music was one of 50's favorite hood films, and he always complimented me on the way I wrote the story. Then we spoke about Havoc and how I had recently found out that Bob Perry from Koch Records was illegally selling Mobb Deep music on the internet and in stores. Bob put out an album, Infamous Archives, without our permission, and we were planning on suing him. 50 agreed to back us and make sure we had a strong case. The day had come. February 29th, 2008. It was time for my sentencing hearing. Kiki and I woke up early. I planned ahead and found out what I was allowed to wear in Rikers Island. I wore a dark gray sweatsuit, dark gray Scully, two fresh white t-shirts, two pairs of socks, black shell-toe Adidas, and thermal underwear so I wouldn't be cold. I cut tiny holes in the cuffs and bottom elastic of the sweatshirt, stuffing as many little morphine pills as possible inside the holes just in case I got sick. I wasn't trying to suffer from pain inside of a prison cage. Kiki filmed me on the drive to Manhattan Supreme Court. One last piece of footage for the mostinfamous.com. Before I went in, when we arrived at court, all my boys were waiting out front. Alchemist, Havoc, Al Pacino, Tyson, Gotti, Chinky, Nice, Fly, and a few others. Press camera snapped pictures as we walked towards the courthouse entrance. "Good luck, Prodigy," a white cameraman yelled out. "Take care of yourself. We see you when you get home." The crew walked inside and took the elevator to the courtroom on the 14th floor. Irv was waiting in the hallway. "You ready, kid?" he asked. "Yeah, let's get this shit over with," I said. I gave Kiki one last kiss and hug, then walked into the courtroom. The court clerk called my name. I walked to the defendant table to be sentenced by the judge. The court officers cuffed my wrists and led me to a back room. I turned around to get one last look at my wife, Kiki. Sadness spread across her face. October 3rd, 2009, Mid-State Correctional Facility, Marcy, New York, 9 a.m. Taking an early morning spin around the Pebble Line Yard before my daily workout routine was my favorite thing to do in prison. It was my escape from the trivial inmate conversations and annoying noise and chatter that constantly came out the CO's walkie-talkies. It was peaceful. Dirt and pebbles crunching under my sneakers as I walked at a calm pace. The leaves of the tall trees rustling in the wind, birds chirping, and my inner voice reminded me how lucky I was to have had so many chances to get my life together. You better know that after this, your chances are done. If you don't get out there and stick to the script, the rest of your life will be nothing but pain, sorrow, and regret, I told myself. As I strolled around the dusty path, I kept thinking about this book, Evolution of a Revolutionary, an autobiography of Tupac's mom, Afeni Shakur, written by Jasmine Guy. Afeni said something in that book that made me realize why I kept fucking up, even though I was trying to live righteous all those years. She explained that the Black Panther Party she had been a part of had overwhelming power mentally and physically. Some of the smartest, toughest brothers and sisters ever. They created an incredible amount of positive change in the black communities worldwide, even inspiring other oppressed races to stand up and fight for equality. But the Panthers' lack of spiritual power or God in their movement was a major reason behind their downfall. Afeni didn't say it like that exactly, but that's exactly what she meant. And I could relate 100%. I had the mental and physical strength to do a lot of good things in life. and had a lot of real good success. But I didn't have the spiritual power of God that it takes to do great things. Ever since I was a teenager, I tell people, I'm a spiritual person, but I don't believe in God. I was too young-minded to realize that that was a hypocritical statement. See, I always looked at things from a scientific point of view. So believing something to be true doesn't mean it's actually the truth. But when you know something is true, that's when you're sure and it's a fact. In other words, I didn't want faith in God. I wanted God in fact. I was looking for God all over the place. In my prayers when I was young, in the hospital when I was in tremendous pain, in books, up in the sky, and in my questions to my father. Is there God? I asked Pops. Yes, he answered. How do you know that God is real? I've seen God before, he said. If you've seen God, then what did God look like? God looks like water. Water? Yeah, Pops said. God looks like water. God is everywhere and everything. Once I officially acknowledged that God has always been and always will be in my life, it gave me the power to handle any situation. It put my anger in check and taught me to approach problems as lessons. Nothing is a challenge to me anymore, just an experience. I don't compete anymore. I just create. There's no such thing as opposition. It's just nature at work. HNIC Part 2 was released on April 22nd, 2008, about 2 months after I went in. It was a commercial failure, selling just over 60,000 units. To be honest, I wasn't upset, because the main reason I released that album was for my family to have the advance, salary, and mortgage payment money while I was in prison. I was aware that the company wasn't capable of pushing my album to its maximum sales potential without me being able to properly promote it. It had nothing to do with the economy, changing trends in the music industry, or my ability to create quality songs. That company just didn't know what to do without me, so they dropped the ball. About 9 months into my bid, Voxonic was so furious that they had to pay my wife $10,000 a month after I gotten locked up, that they stopped paying her and answering her calls. Wow. They're the ones that agreed to my terms. But I put that album and that company out of my mind and focused on the songs that I was creating now. The only things that really matter in life are the things that need to be taken care of right now. As a matter of fact, these are the most important words of wisdom in this book. Yesterday is gone, and tomorrow doesn't count unless you take care of your priorities right now. 50 Cent had came to visit me soon after New Year's 2009. He came alone. The whole prison was talking about the visit. In the visitor's room, the COs had to tell inmates and their visitors to fall back and stop asking for autographs. We spoke for an hour and a half about his film company, Cheetah Vision, and the movie he wrote for his album, Before I Self-Destruct. He said he named the character who's his little brother in the film after my son, Shaka. 50 had FedExed Shaka $1,000 cash as a Christmas gift. Shaka was 13 and a full-blown skateboarder who wanted to go pro. So he bought a bunch of skate gear with his gift money. 50 told me he was looking forward to my return so we can get started on the next Mobb Deep album. We had a real good visit. Johnson, a CO woke me up at around 11 a.m. on a Saturday, just after 2010 New Year, and announced, "Visit." When I arrived at the visiting building, a big smile spread across my face when I saw Havoc sitting alone, sipping on a cup of coffee. Wow. Finally, he came. "Yo, forgive me for not visiting and writing you back like I should," Hav said after a handshake and a hug. There's no excuse for it, man. Listen, I just want to communicate more so we can continue to be successful with Mobb Deep, I said. I can't lie. I sit in my cell mad as hell at you, wondering why don't you want to talk? But no matter how mad I get, I always come to the same conclusion. Mobb Deep is more important than both of our personal feelings toward each other. We still have a business to run. Nah, it's not like that, Ash said. You know I love you like my own brother. I just have a hard time writing letters, and there's no excuse why I don't visit more. Have, I know you mad at me for getting locked up and messing up our money flow, and I apologize for that, I said. You used to tell me all the time to stop carrying guns and getting into trouble. Man, I used to be scared to get in the car with you, because you always had a gun, Hav said. I'm done with all that now. And I've written 7 albums in here so far. I've been wanting to talk to you about music and our plans. Yo, the industry is real different now. Even big-time R&B artists is only selling a few 100,000 units, Hav said. It's tough. Rap music's still selling millions of copies, I reminded Hav. Just look at Lil Wayne, Jay-Z, T.I., Eminem. We just have to make incredible music. Not just, oh, that's hardcore, but, yo, that's incredible. We can't allow industry sales to fuck with our confidence. Don't ever forget that Mobb Deep is something special. All we have to do is keep going. Yo, you should visit Lil Wayne while he's in Rikers. Wayne and I have been writing each other. That nigga love us, man. He's a good dude. I saw him in Manhattan before I turned myself in, and he told me he wanted beats from you. Even Alchemist got a beat on Carter 3. You should have been on that album. Alright, I'm gonna try to get over there. Did you hear the beat I did on 50's new album? Have asked. Yeah, that shit is hard. I like it. I heard you got something on Eminem and Kanye's albums. Don't slow down. You need to do more production for other artists. People love your beats, man. Havoc just wasn't good at networking in the business world. Why a person would want to turn down so much money, opportunity, and great relationships is beyond me. I'll never understand Havoc. He's a mystery. Probably the 8th wonder of the world. But I still love him. You know me, Pete. I don't like being around people, Hav said. I don't hang out at the G-Unit office because I'm not good with that networking shit. That's what you do. You think 50 want to release another Mobb Deep album? There's a rumor on the internet saying he dropped us from the label. That's just a rumor. We just gotta do our part and create great music like we always do. Yo, I ain't drink alcohol in 2 years, Hav said. Today actually makes 2 years. Wow. Keep it up, man. I was really proud of him. We gotta be more focused than ever before. You know how many people want to see us fall off? If it's hard for artists to sell units right now, well, that's too bad for them. We in a class of our own. That attitude brought us this far. The moment that you forget that, you finish. And that's when I'm going to be forced to keep it moving on you. Havoc laughed, but he knew I was serious. See, that's the motivation I've been missing since you've been away, Hav said. You got me hyped now. I was a little nervous about coming up here at first. I couldn't even sleep last night. That's why I'm drinking all this damn coffee. I had like 3 cups already. Nigga, this is how we feed our families. The bottom line for me was always our business and our music, I said. I know, Hav said. Another 30 minutes passed and we said our goodbyes. I told Hav to make sure he sent me some beats. And he said he would. In my cell, I sat on my paper-thin mattress, thinking about how far Havoc and I had come. All the songs we wrote and recorded, all those beats, tours, parties, after-parties, groupies, videos, interviews, contracts, labels, lawyers, and offices. All the money we made, spent, shared, wasted, and given away to so-called friends. Prison gave me plenty of time to reflect. In the street, I didn't think, I just did. After Havoc's visit, my spirit was at ease. I thought about how other people could inspire you to feel and do better. Havoc inspired me to allow forgiveness. Nas inspired me to prove people wrong. He told Twin I was corny back when I battled him, and I had forgiven him a few times. Hopefully, he could do the same for me. Even Jay-Z was a huge inspiration in my life as far as how he carried himself and conducted his business. The problems that we all had with each other was just petty street bravado. We're all a special breed of black men. New York rappers with a gift. We reach millions of people around the world who talk, dress, and act just like us. I'm sure there'll be plenty of newcomers filling our shoes when we've officially played out. I wish everybody wellness, love, peace, and happiness. And I laugh at anybody who thinks there's something soft about that. You got a lot of growing up to do. I went through the same thing. Acknowledgements. 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 A great number of people inspired me to write this book, directly as well as indirectly. From my family and friends to people I look up to who don't even know me. I appreciate them all and hope they too will find some type of inspiration within these pages, my life, and my music. This body of work, along with other goals I've reached, was accomplished while keeping all of them in mind and with their assistance. Though they may not even know it, I want to show my sincere appreciation for those who helped make this book possible, so I must pay my respect forward. The creator and life force that most know as God. Without the grace and power of God, nothing would be. My loving mother for teaching me about love, peace, and happiness, and for being patient through my juvenile BS as a young kid. My brother, Greg, for being a true big bro, always taking care of me and making me laugh, even in times when I was in tremendous pain and it hurt to do so. And my niece, Kenesha, and nephew, Kenny. My nana, Miss Bernie Johnson, who would have proudly displayed this book on her coffee table, along with her collection of Jet magazines. My father, Little Bud, for teaching me about mental and physical strength and fearlessness. My grandfather, Big Bud, for teaching me about discipline, hard work, and determination through the example of his own successful music career. My grandmother, the no-nonsense Bernice H.N.I.C. Johnson, who schooled me constantly on business and an entrepreneurial way of thinking, money management, and being proud of my black culture. Her name and legacy will live forever. Uncle Lenny and Aunt Connie, both of whom have bailed me out and given me shelter in times of need and that little bit of cushion to absorb my hard falls. Miss Cookie, my wife's mother, for accepting me into the family. My friend, the boss, 50 Cent, and his staff at G-Unit for opening up several new doors of opportunity for me and introducing me to Dr. Michael Diamond, who is now my nutritionist. It was Dr. Diamond who made the proper connections for me to become a published author. Thanks to my literary agent, the one and only David Vigliano, as well as Michael Harriet, for his help in the early stages. David Peake and Laura Checkaway, my new partner and scribe. Without her expert knowledge, wisdom, and understanding of Mobb Deep, Prodigy, and the unique culture of hip-hop, this autobiography would not have been turned in and released to the world on time. This gracious young woman has gone the extra 100 miles because she knows the importance of this story. Laura has taught me a lot about this craft. Also, Laura's team, Abby Addis, Shauna Barboza, and John Pegg III, for their contributions. John Baselli, P. Peter Keys, and wife, Miss J. Keys. The entire Simon & Schuster Touchstone staff. Publisher Stacey Creamer, editor-in-chief Trish Todd, associate publisher David